and welcome to Takeoff, the Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Bryce. Today, I'm joined by the full crew, Travis, Emily, Matt. How are we doing today?
I'm still great.
Oh, Emily.
Spoiler alert.
Outed us spoiler in the first, wow, first seconds as if people watching us on YouTube couldn't tell.
I know. No one changed.
Well, yeah. They've had at least like 2 weeks since the last episode, so maybe they thought we just happened to pick the same wardrobe.
Wait, y'all don't have a set wardrobe where you know what you're wearing 2 weeks from today and it's already planned and sitting out? Is that not normal?
Some may argue I wear the same thing every day. Who knows?
Well, we are recording this one right on the heels of our last episode, which we just wrapped for kind of the trips that are upcoming for us and what we're planning. Not happy to say, I don't think any updates have been made on that front in the last 9 minutes or so between recording sessions here.
How's your Lake Como trip shaping up?
None. It's still the same, although I did do a quick award search for my Greece trip for next year, but the calendar's not open yet, so I'm basically right where I left off.
That's so funny that your priority was, let me look at this
trip.
Next trip before I finish wrapping up the trip I already have booked.
Yeah. I mean, that's logical, though. Right?
Yeah, sure.
Leo, why would we behave any differently here? So the outfits are the same. The faces are the same. The episode format going to be a little bit different. This is not your typical episode of Takeoff. Today, we are pitting two iconic dream destinations against each other, Italy versus Japan, or I guess working title, ramen versus ravioli, perhaps.
Oh.
We'll see which one of those wins. We're going to be comparing these destinations round by round, looking at kind of flights, hotels, ground transportation activities, and overall value. We're going to speak to our own experiences and, you know, for those of us who have been to either or both of these destinations. And at the end, we'll each cast our vote for which one of these destinations we would choose for a points trip this year. No fence sitting is allowed. We have to make a choice. So panelists, if you will, be ready to cast your vote.
At least I'm.
And we also want to hear from you too. After listening, be sure to head over to our Facebook group for the post on this episode or YouTube or wherever else you might be consuming this. Let us know in the comment section which one you're picking or any aspect of these destinations that we may have missed. We're going to do our best. And this is one that we have some experience with, so we're pretty confident in this one, but we're not perfect. As we kind of mentioned, starting this episode, searching for award space to our next trips. We are not all that different from you, dear listener. Before we kick off, a quick reminder, if you are new to Points and Miles, you want to check out episodes 1 through 6 of our show for the fundamentals, the basics of Points and Miles, and be sure to check out our Facebook group, as I mentioned, which now has over 390,000 members for daily inspiration. I'm sure there'll be some fun comments and feedback on this one.
There, we didn't cross 400,000 in the last
minutes. I mean, we can make some other predictions. Let's see, Travis finally found a word space to Greece. Emily decided to skip the family stop in New York and go straight for the Lufthansa business. What else could we do here? Bryce still hasn't booked anything, of course, because I'm waiting until last second. But yeah, fun times. Poke fun at ourselves. And if you do have any burning questions other than have you actually booked that trip yet, check out 10X Travel Plus, where that's our paid membership program. Members can call in and have their questions answered here on the podcast. Or if you prefer a more private setting, you do have 2 30-minute one-on-one consults each year where you can talk to, I believe most of us participate in that as well as the rest of our team, to get answers on strategy, help book your next trip to Japan, Italy, wherever you want to go, or just chat, have fun. It's a great way to get some personalized advice. But the focus today is Italy versus Japan. These are actually two destinations that come up very frequently in our award booking service, as well as just our general kind of polls and reader knowledge. As I was thinking about this, this seems to be the two most popular destinations that I've seen kind of just period since starting this. I'm curious about the rest of you. When you talk about Points and Miles with our readers or friends, has anything come up before Italy and Japan?
I guess it kind of depends on the audience, but I feel like the Maldives is a huge draw. Like, lots of people get into this because they're like, I can go to this place that's so far around the world. I mean,
one of them's on the pod right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or Australia is a really popular one. London is a city, not a country, but I do echo, I think Japan and Italy tend to be some of the most popular things.
Yeah, Japan's had a huge resurgence over the past couple of years.
Agreed. Travis, have you been looking into booking Japan again yet? I think we're all waiting for the return trip that was canceled during COVID.
I mean, I mentioned on last podcast,
you've been through Japan.
I've been through Japan, yeah. And I mentioned on the last podcast my Solomon Islands trip and how we might do Australia and New Zealand again. But our second option, if that doesn't work out, is possibly Japan instead. So it might happen.
I'm in a tough spot in my household because my wife's been to Japan and I haven't been to Japan. And I think she would rather go other places again. She's not 100% opposed to going to Japan. But meanwhile, I'm like, I really want to go.
Solo trip. Just,
well, yeah, maybe. But yeah, it's an uphill battle at the moment. So trying to make it happen. We'll see.
I mean, Hawaii just got blocked, so we could potentially stitch these together. Well,
next time we go to Hawaii, we just have to route through Japan. That's our only option.
Just not the craziest.
You mentioned that you booked these while you're there. Just like, hey, a route change happened. We're not going home through Philly. Yeah. We're going home through, what is this? Tokyo. Yeah. Where's Tokyo?
I meant to put in H&L, but I put in H&D instead.
Simple typo on the keyboard. I typed with my left hand, not my right hand.
You did make a typo like that fairly recently, right? A couple of years ago in Norway?
What did I do? What did I book? Oh, yeah, I did.
Bergen?
I was trying to fly from Bergen to Helsinki, and I've booked from Berlin to Helsinki because I typed in B-E-R instead of, I guess, B-E-G, I think it was. Yeah. Yeah, good memory. Forgot about that. So, yeah, maybe I'll just do that again. Hope she's not listening.
Hi, Ashley.
So
anyway, let's talk about first about kind of Italy and like the cheapest economy and business class options to get there to kind of set the framing, because again, there is no fence sitting allowed. We do have to vote at the end here, so let's dive into that. So if you're going to get to Italy, perhaps your best way to do so with economy is to look, at least at the time of recording right now, this does change pretty frequently. But Flying Blue has a bit of a sweet spot to Italy. You can find economy flights for as low as 21,500 miles per person one way in economy from the East Coast. Now, that's not quite like Virgin Atlantic to London low, but that's still quite low. Like that's, you know, I have this amount of miles just kind of sitting around left over from past trips low. If you want to go for business class, also on Air France KLM with Flying Blue, look for 53,000 to 60,000 miles one way. You know, Rome and Milan do have multiple airline options and all the major alliances, Oneworld, Star Alliance, SkyTeam. Actually, that's truly of both of these destinations. There's many different ways to get there on many different carriers and many different airports that you could potentially go into, including multiple in the same city, especially for Japan. So I guess that would be the first bit of advice that comes out of this. Like if you want to go to like Italy and your heart is like set on Rome, don't only limit your search options just to Rome. You can get around relatively easy in both of these countries when you get there. And sometimes you will find better space going into other airports like Milan or Venice, Naples, perhaps, if we're talking about Italy.
You can fly from Philly to Milan.
We just learned that 37 minutes ago.
We also, honorary mention, it's not the cheapest way to get there, but the Emirates Fifth Freedom, JFK to Milan. It's a pretty fancy way to get there.
I've heard that's a good flight.
Ah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't know. My parents would know. I booked them on it. But
yeah.
Ooh, do you want to talk about that? Is there,
that was
a little bit of resentment?
Oh, no.
Jealousy.
No resentment.
Sorry, not resentment. Jealousy.
As part of my dad's retirement present, we booked him on Emirates, just the business class on that Fifth Freedom route. And I think they had quite a nice time.
Nice.
It's a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
Now, a few other options, Emily.
Yeah.
Let me know where to send my TSA pre-check number.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You can send your social security number too and like your credit card information.
We can just do it right now, simplify things. You just tell her. Yeah. We'll publish it. It'll be fine.
From back in the early 2000s, the credit monitoring service. What was that?
Oh,
called?
Yeah. It was like Credit Lock or whatever. Yep.
Yeah,
something like that. Used to put a social on the side of like trucks
billboards
and stuff.
And buildings. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, side quest.
Yeah.
Never heard how that story ended.
Squirrel.
Well, all of that was a bit of a side quest on getting to Italy with business class. A few other options to consider. You could fly on TAP, Portugal, for about 70,000 miles one way in business class, booking through Avianca. Iberia, you could find as low as 34,000 off-peak one way in business from the East Coast. That would be like JFK or Boston to Madrid with a connection. ITA Airways, some niche sweet spots worth kind of looking into, as well as United, our, I don't know if we call it podcast favorite, but at least one of our hosts' podcast favorite. 80 to 88,000 United miles one way in business class. Can't even come from Denver.
Yeah, you'll be shocked to know that I included that one and not Travis.
Thanks, Emily.
You're welcome.
There's plenty of room on the United bandwagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing to keep in mind with these pricings is that these are we're trying to give you some typical stuff, at least at the time of recording, which, you know, probably means there'll be a devaluation an hour to an hour and a half from now. But sometimes it'll obviously cost more. Sometimes you can find even less. We were shouting out, I called out last podcast episode, American Airlines web special that I booked for 50,000 miles in business class. Flying Blue has their promo rewards, you know, in May of 2025, which is when we're recording this right now. There's a number of North American cities to Europe in economy for 18,050 miles one way, 45,000 in business class. And that's not even considering stacking some transfer bonuses. So these are some great ways to get there to kind of frame the amount of points you need, but get lucky and be booking it at a good time and find even better.
Which would be amazing. And of course, anytime you're traveling to Europe on points a mile, I think we have to mention that you don't necessarily have to have a destination of the actual country that you hope to visit. I mean, here comes our friend, you know, Virgin again, where you could potentially just book like New York to London for the, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 points that whatever those charging for economy, and then fly Ryanair, Travis's favorite, once he tries it for the first time, you know, down to Rome or Milan or Venice or wherever you need to get to. It's certainly a lot easier when things are a little bit tighter together and you have good budget airlines that kind of cover that last mile slash last 800 mile problem, at least from a Europe travel perspective. So lots of ways to get to Italy. I'm curious on experience here on the show of kind of which ones we've flown. I'll start myself. I've done the Fifth Freedom route, Emirates. I've done both business and first for Milan. And I believe I flew on, I guess, US Airways back in the day, going to Italy. That strategy is a little bit more dated. I don't think you're going to find award availability for that one, but do let me know if you do. But how about the rest of you? How many of you have been to Italy before on points and miles, or I guess otherwise? And do you remember how you got there?
I have, and I'll carbon copy your routings. I did US Airways from Philly to Rome like 10 or so years ago. And I've done the Emirates first home from Milan to JFK.
I've been, and throwing a different one out there, I've done the Iberia option, the 34,000 miles in business class. I think I went via JFK and returned through Chicago. That one was really nice, you know, to snag 34,000 points.
Yeah. Probably a little bit more, because 34,000, and that's to Madrid, right? And then you have to
Take
that segment from Madrid to wherever in Italy. So maybe like 40,000 or something all in, but still a great price.
I think it's distance-based off of the total flight. So I think from the East Coast,
fits in that band.
Yeah, I actually went to Southern France first. So my routing was to Nice, so not too much more. It fit in the 34,000.
Oh, nice. Yeah, awesome.
The return might have been a little bit more going from Florence to Madrid to Chicago, but it was a great option.
Well, I guess add some context on there too. For the Iberia, those are the off-peak dates, so typically not middle of summer. It's basically...
It was February.
I was going to say mid to late September, maybe early October, all the way till probably mid-April. They publish a calendar. So if that's something that you're looking to book, be sure to pull that up. Otherwise, if you're looking for 34,000 one-way in business in the middle of July and wondering why you're not finding it, that's why.
That would be it.
Turns out other people want to go to Italy in the summer as well.
Yeah, but, weird concept.
Yeah. Lots of different ways to get there, although Japan might have even more options. Here's some kind of high-level things to know. Now, it is, of course, farther, considerably farther, especially from the East Coast. But you can find ANA round-trip business class for 75,000 and 90,000 miles through Virgin Atlantic. That's if you can find availability. Definitely can be dicey. You can fly Japan Airlines first class one way from the U.S. to the West Coast for 70,000 to 80,000 of Matt's new favorite loyalty currency, Alaska miles. Or a little bit more, 80,000 if you want to book it with American miles one way. That availability can be pretty tough to find, although we did just see like 2 or 3 weeks ago, like just wide open availability almost every day all summer for that particular booking, which is rare. And congrats to those of you who grabbed it. ANA First Class from the U.S., 110,000 to 120,000 miles through Virgin Atlantic. Travis can fly backward, his favorite. Or if you're looking at like U.S. to Tokyo on Star Alliance carriers through Turkish, you could find it for as little as 45,000 miles each way in economy. Japan Airlines economy from the West Coast, you're looking at 30,000 to 35,000 miles through British Airways. And of course, when you're flying Japan, don't forget that Tokyo has two main airports. Narita and Haneda, is that how it's pronounced? H&D. Make sure you type that one correctly, Matt. Yep.
You're correct.
Or you can go into Osaka, perhaps. There's going to be quite a few options for you, and we'll talk about kind of getting around within the country when you get there. But both of these destinations have many different ways to book with points and miles. I know, especially with Japan, you have some of like the best products in the sky. Like if you're looking to fly like the real, like the Unicorn Redemptions, super fancy flights, you're going to get quite a few of those options for Japan. Japan is, of course, farther. You're going to have more time in the air, so maybe stomaching an economy booking this time. Leave it for the next trip. But very, very, I don't want to say easy to get to, but very doable to get to for either of these destinations. And that's what makes them so popular, of course, as well.
I will add, and this does not come from experience whatsoever, that if you are fine flying economy, I believe that ANA actually has some of the most legroom in economy out of any airline. I'm pulling from deep in the brain, but I think it's up to like 34 inches of pitch. So it might be a little bit longer, especially if you're coming from the East Coast, but it's probably a more tolerable option as well. There, another option that we've seen a lot of, and I don't know the number of points off the top of my head, I think it's a little higher, but that tends to have some decent availability, is Singapore Airlines operates a Fifth Freedom from, I believe it's LA, to Tokyo. Typically has some more reliable availability, or at least has over the past year or two. It's a little higher in points, but if your option is going or not going, it gives you another good option.
Well, and there's one we didn't mention here that's actually kind of interesting that we probably should. Zip Air is a relatively new, I'd say in the last year or two, flight option to Japan from, I believe they fly from LA to Tokyo. It's essentially like a Ryanair type thing. It's a no frills airline. So like, but they have lay flat business class seats. You literally pay for everything. You know, amenity kit, you got to pay for. You want headphones, you got to pay for. Your meals, you basically got to pay for it. So I'm pretty sure I've seen flights for like $600 or $700 in business class one way from a cash standpoint. And then obviously, you know, your luggage, all the other, you know, check-in online, all those things are literally like pay for fees. But it could be worthwhile, especially if you're struggling to find space on other carriers, something to look into.
How much does it cost to go to the bathroom on Zip Air?
I don't know.
It's like tap to pay to open it.
Exactly.
Is that how I can get the sky shower? Like, do they have one I can just pay
for? I'm going to bet they don't have a shower on Zip Air.
Fair enough.
Hey, well, I'll throw out there that Zip Air flies from another one of my favorite cities in the U.S.
Oh, Houston?
They fly from Houston.
To Tokyo?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I was just doing a quick Google because we were talking about how flying to Japan is going to be much further than flying to Italy. It's a difference of 1 hour for me.
Oh, really? It's like big time for me.
Oh,
it's
I
like
know.
8 hours yeah. to Italy and like 14 or 15 to Japan. It's almost double. That's crazy.
Just 1 hour. So really, like maybe I will sit on the fence for this one.
Might have to.
Yeah, the West Coast.
Not to get Japan's ahead of myself, probably. But that's one of my arguments for later in the episode.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler.
Yeah, I think you would have a little bit more of a conventional like travel season for Italy. Most people are trying to get there in the warmer months, like in the summer. Japan, a little bit less so. You have like cherry blossom season, of course, in the spring. But it would have a bit more of a kind of a even distribution of folks who are traveling to that area to where it's not as obvious of like, this is definitely off peak. You're going to find more availability at these times. Whereas like if you want to take the Travis plan and only visit Italy or Europe in the winter, I think that's quite doable.
Yeah.
But of course, swimming is a little bit more chilly. But so
Travis
both of these
is going in the water too. Me. Yeah. Yeah.
both of these very doable. Yeah. Go ahead, Travis.
Well, this is a showdown. Do we have to pick one?
I know we have to vote at the end here for which one's our favorite overall, but you know what? Let's lean into that. Let's pick one. Which one of these in your opinion, for like, let's try to think about like the average reader's situation, kind of like have a fair amount of points, but not so much that they're just kind of sitting on, you know, millions of them in each program, you know, want to get to both. I think we do also have to mention that a common kind of weak spot or thing that people miss is that booking Japan premium cabin travel is difficult if you have more than two passengers. So we see a lot of folks like, I'm looking for six first class tickets on, you know, Japan Airlines or something. It's like, and I'm looking for three unicorns for each of my daughters, but you know, that's not going to happen. I'll find that before you probably find the, you know, six tickets in premium cabin. But you know, for the average person, can you kind of speak to which one of these is kind of more approachable and what to know?
Well, I mean, I feel like you can't sit on the fence. Is that your argument for Italy over Japan?
That's where I'm leaning, but I'm waiting to see how the other answers come in first, given that we kind of threw this wrinkle in.
I'll go and give others the time to synthesize. If you're more, have less flexibility in dates, need to go at a specific time, I've got to go with Italy here. There's just so many more options for getting there. There's so many more daily flights between the US and Europe in general, and getting somewhere in Europe and repositioning within Europe to Italy is going to be easier with Japan. You could fly maybe South Korea, but that's even farther, and then you're backtracking back. So I think you're going to have more success going to Italy if you're looking over certain dates and times for your flights. But if I had to pick one, I like my nice flight experiences, and ANA's business class is my favorite. Japan Airlines has really stepped it up, and Singapore, I mean, that's a really good additional option as well. So if you're looking for the better experience, I'm going Japan. And that's more in line, if I'm going based just off the flights, that's more in line with my perspective. So I'm going to give it to Japan for just the better overall flight.
I'm with you here, Travis. Japan wins this argument specifically on flights alone and flight experience. Hands down, it's not even close. The only one that on the Italy route that at least gives some help here is the Emirates experience, just because they, Middle Eastern care, they run a pretty elevated experience. But otherwise, you're essentially just looking, if we're talking about truly flights to Italy, but even greater Europe as a whole, Japanese carriers beat them all hands down compared to predominantly U.S. carriers. Flight experience, catering, service doesn't even come close to comparing. So Japan, in my eyes, wins this hands down.
I'm going to go the opposite, but approach it from like an ease of finding availability perspective. I just think like for the average reader, for the average person who like maybe doesn't have millions of points and can kind of pick and choose everything, I think it's going to be more, it's going to feel more natural and easier to find availability to Italy than it might be to Japan, especially if you're trying to find some of these premium cabins. So I'm going to go Italy.
Yeah, I think everyone's right so far. And I completely agree with the idea that Japan's going to have better products to choose from. Like if you're going for just high-end experience, Italy's going to just be easier to book overall, but really your only kind of aspirational product to Italy is Emirates, right? Am I missing anything there where it's like, if I hear like someone did an award redemption to Italy, I don't ask like, who are you flying? I ask, are you flying Emirates? Because it's either that or like everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, some of the United Polaris products obviously would not be up there on an Emirates level, but in my opinion, they would certainly eclipse American and Delta's products. Delta typically flies a lot of their older business class products to Europe. There are obviously a couple select routes, but typically those new like A350s and some of the premier Delta One options are going to Asia and Australia. So there might be a handful here that go to like London, but I do not believe those are making the venture to Italy.
Yeah, and while
so
you could,
that's their way of answering the question for us. They're taking their planes and putting the new ones to Japan. Correct. So, end of argument.
You know, if you wanted a nicer experience to Italy, you could go a long way. You could totally route through the Middle East or Turkish. But I mean, then you're drastically adding on to your travel time.
Your travel time might be further than going to Japan if you're in the Middle East. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not that these are bad options, right? My Iberia experience was fine. I've flown British Airways to Europe. Matt really enjoys Finnair. Like there's still some perfectly fine options for getting to and from Italy. Like, don't take this as, oh man, I'm gonna have a bad experience going to Italy. It's just the Japan carriers are some of the top of the top when it comes to their in-flight experiences.
Oh, 100%. I don't know that this fits 100% in this sort of category of like the transit there, but I think at some point, kind of like we were talking about, you do have to factor in the overall travel time and distance too. You know, for me from the East Coast, like I mentioned earlier, it's probably an 8-hour travel experience if I were to go nonstop, like from Charlotte to Rome or something like that. You know, even though it's not going to be as good of an overall experience as Japan, it's 8 hours, it's one night sleep, whatever, versus for me, it's 14 plus hours, probably, you know, almost guaranteed with a connection. So really like 20-hour travel day from here to Japan. I would need that higher level of service, product, experience overall to, you know, more or less justify or help make that travel that's two and a half times longer to the destination, you know, more tolerable too. So, but like Emily was saying, it's close to 50-50 from her location. So some of that is going to be unique to you as a traveler and where you're traveling from to some of these destinations, but I don't think you can overlook it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Takeaway
East Coast versus West Coast, big difference here for sure.
Yeah. Takeaway is that the United States is huge. Yeah. And apparently I'm just in the middle of two great destinations.
No, but you moved to the West Coast.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's right. Oh, did I out you?
I was thinking about that today. I was just convinced that Colorado was further west than it really was before I moved here. So just telling people I'm moving to the West Coast. There's no coast in sight. Can confirm. I passed geography, I swear.
But before we move on, have to do a little shout out to our Hawaii travelers for whom Japan obviously is the easier answer. And ANA has their like three A380s that they fly.
The Honu, flying Honu.
Yeah.
Yep.
That would be such a cool experience. It's totally different from all of their other offerings. And just the planes look super cool. Every time I see them in person, it just makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm.
So now Travis is going to book that Hawaiian availability from last episode and continue on to Japan.
Yeah, I'm repositioning for my flight to Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also ask Matt to start texting you the availability finds when he gets the no from his B2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay, well now this can go to Travis and yeah, that might actually happen. So let's move on to round two here, kind of in-country travel. Both of these destinations have pretty good options here for in-country travel, certainly better than we would have here in the United States. A little bit smaller of a geographic area than we're used to. So let's talk about kind of Italy first here. Big train network. You can take a high-speed rail that connects most major cities. Train tickets tend to be bookable through travel portals, so you can redeem your points at that, you know, 1 to 1.5 cent value per point. There are many regional airports serviced by budget carriers. This is where you're going to find EasyJet, Ryanair. It's easy to compare those cash prices on any travel booking site that you prefer. You're going to have limited points options, though, for those in-country flights. So don't plan on bragging about your cents per point redemption for, you know, Venice to Milan. I don't think there's going to be particularly aspirational bookings to be had there, as well as great value.
I think that extends also to intra-Europe in general. So if you do take like the JFK to London flight for 6,000 points, you then book that separate flight from London to wherever in Italy, like don't expect to get like a crazy redemption value there.
For sure. Yep. Of course, Italy is very big from north to south. So you do have the issue of if you want to go like Milan, maybe down to Sicily or one of the islands, train is probably not going to be your best bet there. You have the public transport within each of these major cities, in which, you know, Japan is, you know, world class in that regard. But you do have some options as well in Italy with, you know, subways and trains that are more local. And then in northern Italy, they have more extensive public transit in Milan. And, you know, you can take even water taxis in Venice, but it's a little bit more disconnected, I guess, in my experience, than you'd find in many areas of Japan. We're switching now to Japan. Japan Rail Pass Clutch can be purchased with points through many travel portals as well. Japan has the bullet train network. It is extensive. It is punctual. It is comfortable. There are multiple classes of service. Virtually everyone who tries those, at least in my experience, is blown away by just how awesome it is. And then immediately comes home and is like, why don't we have that in the United States?
Yep.
Which, seriously, why don't we have that in the United States? That'd be awesome. You know, you have ANA for domestic flights, you have good award availability, but kind of subject to the same issues we talked about with Italy, where it's not going to be incredible redemption values or products, but it's going to get you where you need to go. And of course, when you're in the cities in Japan, Tokyo in particular, you just have an incredibly extensive and efficient network of ways to get around, you know, purchasing cards ahead of time for kind of all you can use train riding, one-time rides. They make it incredibly easy. And really, it seems like since the Olympics came to Japan, I guess we're supposed to come and then came with the kind of quote-unquote Olympics with fewer attendees, it seems to be a little bit easier to get around, especially if you don't speak the language. So that was always a concern when traveling to Japan that has been kind of addressed since then. So easy to get around both of these places, but I'm curious on your takes as to which one is easier to get around and why that answer is definitely Japan.
Yeah. Do you want the perspective of someone who's been to neither or used the transportation systems in neither?
Are you leading the witness?
Let's hold that one for last. Emily's vote will go with the majority. Travis, Matt, I'm curious on your experience in getting around.
I'll summarize this real quickly. I've seen multiple articles for this over the years. One New York Times article where a Japanese train company issued a public apology because the train left 20 seconds early. And another one where the train arrived 35 seconds late and the train driver stepped out and apologized to every passenger and they issued full refunds. That's insane. They went hands down. Like, not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. Just from an efficiency standpoint.
Yeah.
So.
Travis has a lot of thoughts.
I'm excited about this.
He's trying to steal man. I guarantee he's trying to steal man.
Yeah.
All right. Respect. I'm going to go Italy.
Let's go.
Okay.
I think that all of these points are valid. When I've planned my 17 million trips to Japan that have never actually materialized, I've been excited about the bullet train and everything. But the reason I'm going to go Italy is I think we as Americans often forget how big Japan is. We think that it's smaller than it is. You know, Bryce mentioned that Italy is tall north to south. It's about 620 miles long. Japan is about 2,361 miles north to south. And while the bullet train system is somewhat convenient, well, probably is very, very convenient, but it's probably convenient within more of your southern region. If you're really wanting, here's how I'm evaluating it, is if I'm wanting a comprehensive trip where I'm wanting to see, you know, maybe I have 2 or 3 weeks and want to see a variety of the country, going to Japan, you're flying into Tokyo, which is kind of in the central. So if you're wanting to go north, but then go south, it throws additional travel time. Similarly, if you want to go south, but then maybe head up north to Sapporo, it's adding additional travel time. There are more potential issues or just complex logistics you have to navigate with Japan, even if those are easier. Whereas with Italy, you know, the fact that you can fly in to so many different airports, you know, you could fly into Milan and start in the north, then probably an hour or so train to Bologna, another 45 minutes an hour to Florence, hour and a half or two to Rome, another hour or two down to Naples. Like, even if it's not as nice of infrastructure, the linearity of getting around to see a comprehensive view of the country probably is actually going to be a little bit easier. Maybe not as efficient, maybe not as apologetic, but I think that you'll be able to have a more comprehensive plan for traveling to Italy if that's what you want, which I think is reflected in what I typically see with people. I see people going to Italy and hitting 3, 4, 5 different places. But when people go to Japan, they typically do Tokyo and then maybe Kyoto or Osaka. But you rarely hear of people doing Tokyo and Sapporo as well as Kyoto and Osaka. So while it's probably easier and more efficient in Japan, I'm going to give it to Italy on the sense that I think it's going to be easier if you want to see more places in your... You're going to get to see a more...
I'm adding an addendum to my argument. I'm just confused as to why we limited the in-country travel to only trains. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Japan, like you mentioned, the size and scope of it, offers flights intra-country. Obviously, Italy does too. Japan wins this one hands down. Yes, sure, they offer, you know, small regional airline planes as well. Do you know they fly like wide-body planes from parts of Japan to other parts? Like you can fly Japan Airlines A350 from Tokyo to Osaka. I mean, excuse me, to Sapporo. It's like an hour and a half flight. Full lay-flat business class seat, meals, et cetera, for an hour flight. And if you do the same in Italy, you're on probably a 737. And if you decide to pay for business class, you're in a normal economy seat where they just block the middle seat. You'll still get a meal, but just the experience here also, Japan wins hands down. So I was a little confused why we only limited train travel. So I wanted to make sure I got this other point in here too.
That's just us as Americans. I talked too long. Like, train travel. Cool.
Gave you too long to research. Like again, I completely concede on you're going to have a better experience in Japan. But Italy, I feel, is a country where people go and want to see a number of different places. And Japan typically is the same. And quite frankly, the airports in Tokyo are really far away from the city center, even with the good public transit. So you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to have to backtrack 45 minutes to get to the airport an hour and a half before my flight to check in and maybe even check bags as well. That it's Japan, so they're probably going to make it to my destination, but then sit in the airport lounge, which mediocre at best, in order to catch my 45-minute flight. So now my journey became, I don't know what that math is, 17 hours.
I don't know how we got there. Be sure not
to take your first Ryanair flight out of Rome to where the Ryanair airport. It's an hour outside of Rome. They don't fly out of actual Fiumicino, or however you pronounce it.
I mean, once actual Fiumicino is pretty far out, too.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
For me, what it comes down to is once I am in my destination, the quality of my experience is not as important as the ability to see and do what I want. And like, if I'm just trying to do a Tokyo and Kyoto or Tokyo and Osaka or whatever trip to Japan, yeah, that wins. But the diversity, the ability to see so much more diversity in Italy because of the linearity of the path of travel that you can coordinate. I'll pass on the A350 for 45 minutes.
We haven't even gotten into the overnight ferries and stuff that they offer in Japan too, that are incredible. So many modes of transportation.
My only comment will be that I've never heard someone come back from Italy and praise the inter-country transportation. But I just had friends come back from Japan and they were just raving about it. So
I think Emily might have just settled the argument after leading off with, well, I haven't tried either, but I completely agree, because that is every single time it's that. And maybe it's because the bullet trains go so fast, and that's it's unique and interesting, and it makes it feel like way more efficient. And it's like, well, you have to go a lot farther. But you're absolutely right. Most people don't come back to Italy like, wow, that was so easy and convenient to do the trains.
Yeah, but no one's ever excited to take a Porsche on a road trip.
I'm working my way through that metaphor.
That, yeah, I mean, yeah.
It might be faster, but it's about the experience, and like, I don't know. I'm reaching here. Reaching here.
So the important thing to know is that both of these countries do this very well. So if you go to either, one plan on being able better. To get around.
Japan is world class.
We might have to end on fence sitting on this one for sure. Yeah, both.
No,
well.
You can't sit on a fence, it. Bryce. No fence sitting.
Who said that? Was it me? You know, we'll strike that from the transcript here. But yeah, easy to get around once you get there. Of course, some nuances in terms of like, how nice is it when you get around? Is it a Porsche or not? But I think, setting the argument aside, the only losers in any of this is anyone who rents a car in either spot, right?
Yeah, because like rent a Ferrari or a Lamborghini to drive around Italy. Like, who cares about your bullet train? Now, take the road trip in the Lambo.
You won't be able to bring your luggage, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I guess that one,
Bryce, I'm unclear as to where your vote lies. Yeah. You have to vote. So
I mean, Emily switched it for me because she's completely right. I was fully on Team Japan. I guess, you know, I think I'm still leaning Japan here, but every argument I heard against it was like, oh, I didn't think about that. And that's right. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, can I be on team both? Can we do participation ribbons?
No, there's no participation trophy.
Fine, Japan.
All I'm saying is you can rave about the public transit, but I'd rather rave about the pasta.
Wait, that's not even part of the argument here.
Put
some fresh noodles in your ramen.
Yeah.
Hand pulled.
It sounds like we're ready to move on to round three, hotels and stays.
Next week's episode from Tokyo.
In which we fly there. Travis has to fly an ANA economy.
Travis has to go to Italy and we're all going to Tokyo.
There we go.
Okay.
Good luck scheduling that one. Like, yeah, it'll be at 2 a.m. your time. And,
yeah. You know, Italy time.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about hotels and stays in each one, because I do think that these are also two of kind of like the leaders for options for booking hotels and places to stay with points and miles. You know, starting first with Italy, all the major cities are well covered by international brands. So you're going to have multiple options across like Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt. You know, no matter where you go, options to redeem the points that you have and at all different levels of value, if you will. So you do have some kind of like particularly high-end properties that are noteworthy. You know, for Venice, you have like the St. Regis. You have the up in Lake Como. Travis, we just talked about this last episode, which we recorded like an hour ago. Remind me again of the property you're going to up there.
The Grand Hotel Victoria.
There we go. Matt has been there as well, I believe.
Yep.
Oh, but he hasn't been to Japan, so Italy.
Does my vote still even count? Arguing for that one, though. Yep. So you're going to have options kind of everywhere. You do have kind of the super high-end properties, of course, like the iconic spots to go to with your points and miles. But really, and I'm leading off with my own take on this last section here, Japan has all of it. I feel like Tokyo itself has pretty much every single major loyalty program, and they have all of their brands like right up the value stack. It's like if you want to see every potential category of a hotel and like their award chart, just search Japan for any of them. And it's like, boom, 15 options for each one. All the high end, you know, you do have like the iconic properties. Like you'd have like the Park Hyatt Tokyo. I've stayed there myself. That's where they filmed Lost in Translation. You'd have the high end Marriott properties as well, which are just escaping me at the moment, because I usually just completely skip high end Marriott because I don't have any status and they require just an outrageous amount of points.
Oh, Hyatt, Hilton.
That too.
Well,
I'm sorry, Marriott. Marriott's, the high-end Marriott's for me, I was like, I'd rather go Hyatt. But yeah, you'd have, you know, the high-end Hilton options there as well. If you're going to Japan, I know I'm talking about it just from a Tokyo lens, but really in all the major cities there, you're going to have every option up and down the board. Places that you've heard of, places that people actually seek out and try to book first, like I'm going to Japan to stay here. So when you're cashing in your points, this is one of those lovely destinations where it's not like, ooh, if you have this particular type of points and focus on that, it's going to do better. Whereas it's like, oh no, this is like a buffet of hotel award options. So curious what your takes are on staying hotels for each of these. Is either of them particularly better than the other? I know where I'm leaning already, but I don't want to start with
that. I think one thing that jumps out to me is it can be much more difficult to book like high-end properties in some of these like really aspirational places in Italy. Like, or just hotels with points, period. Like, if you're trying to go to the Amalfi Coast or Cinque Terre or these types of, like, coastal places, it's borderline impossible unless you're going to use the travel portal. So, I don't know. I see a lot of people who, like, I want to take my honeymoon on points and miles and go to these destinations, and it gets complicated quickly. I think the main cities in those areas are covered really well by all these hotels that are bookable with points, but once you start to move away from those areas, it gets more challenging.
Agreed.
Is that your vote for Japan?
That's my vote for Japan, yeah.
And it's really just an anti-Italy vote, is what I...
Right. Well, yes, only because I haven't really like investigated in Japan enough to be able to make the same claim. I've tried to help people book their homes in the Amalfi Coast and failed, so...
You know, I'll go ahead and speak so Matt has time to do his research and disagree with me wrongfully so. I'm actually going to like listen to more of y'all's arguments, because part of my challenge with both destinations is that I don't really feel as if either one is a place where I'm going for the hotel, which is ironic because that's literally what I'm doing in Lake Como. When I think of Japan, generally I'm thinking more city, where, and I've said this before, I don't care about being in the nicest hotel in the city, because my goal is to be out. It's not, you know, I just need comfortable, safe enough place to stay. And in Japan, really much more interested in the, I might be butchering this, but the ryokans. For like, those are a place where I want to spend more time at the property, but you don't really have many points options for those. I do want to give a shout. We've got a longtime reader who's a 10X Travel Plus member I've done some consults with, who she tells me how I absolutely have to get to the Park Hyatt in Kyoto, that it's the best hotel she's ever stayed at. But beyond that, in general, Kyoto, Tokyo, I'm not needing the nicest hotel. I'm more wanting an Airbnb. And similar in Italy, right? Like, I'm not necessarily wanting them. I feel as if I can get a more genuine experience staying in an Airbnb, VRBO. You know, for the longest time on my phone, my wallpaper was from this Airbnb I stayed at in Florence. There was like two stories on the top of this apartment complex, but we could see the Duomo directly from out of our window. And I loved nothing more than waking up, making myself a nice cup of Italian coffee, just watching the sunrise over the Duomo. It was just beautiful. And those types of experiences aren't something you really get in hotels. So I'm really a little torn, because both destinations are places where I don't feel that a hotel really moves the needle for me.
Travis is firmly planted on the fence right now.
I think he's just trying to dovetail back to trains. He's like, what matters is the trains.
So if I had to pick, I'd probably lean towards Japan, because there are more aspirational properties there that I would be interested in staying at. Whereas in Italy, despite literally staying at an aspirational property in Italy in 6 weeks, I lean more towards wanting that more authentic on the ground experience. Whereas in Japan, I want that mixed in with the ryokans, but in general, like, a hotel is fine otherwise. And I don't feel that it's really detracting. Whereas in Italy, like, staying at a really nice hotel probably is detracting from a little bit more of an authentic experience. So probably Japan, but convince me, Matt, you've had some time.
I just have to argue completely against your point of the hotel doesn't matter. Oh, basically, yeah. That whole mindset, like, you were saying you'd rather just be in an Airbnb making your coffee. No, I need a, hey, good morning, Mr. Brown. How may I help you? Hotel. Like, oh, yes, breakfast is right this way. Oh, and it's included. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's more my travel style, especially these days. So Japan has three Park Hyatts. I'm picking Japan just from that, potentially that stat alone, because those are three properties I can go and just hang out at for a few days. I mean, so from our trip just a couple weeks ago, we were in Austria for a little over a week and then a couple days in Sweden or whatever. We ended our time in Austria, in Vienna, for 2 days at Park Hyatt Vienna. We camped out there and we explored Vienna, don't get me wrong, but like, we basically spent an entire day at the hotel just using the hotel, because it was a perfect way to like have a quick intermission, like in the middle of our trip, rest, relax, reset, get ready for like the second half. Given the, especially for me, the distance from here to Japan, I'm probably going to have to go for at least 2 weeks to kind of justify the distance to travel time. I can easily see needing to plot one, two, maybe arguably even three of these sort of breaks throughout the trip to rest, recover, and just, you know, relax, not just be on go, go, go mode. So having, you know, options like the Park Hyatt in Tokyo, Niseko, Kyoto, whatever, or even not even Park Hyatt. There's some other fantastic hotels, you know, not even just Hyatt, but like other brands as well. Those just kind of come to mind because they've been on my radar scattered throughout, to really be able to enjoy. It would definitely move the needle for me.
Plus, after you book your Alila trip, what do we call it? Just Alila in general is the destination. You're going to have to look beyond Hyatt because you've burned through all of your Hyatt points at that point.
Oh, we're so good.
We're so good.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah, good to know. Both of them, of course, incredible, but I think I'm casting my vote here for Japan.
I think that's 4 out of 4.
Yeah.
Travis is maybe a half vote. He said Japan.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Airbnb.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to go to Japan, just because if I had to pick one where I'm staying, where I care more about getting that authentic, more local experience, I think Italy is where I want it. And I don't think hotels are accomplishing that.
Why don't we clip this and see what Travis thinks after he gets back from his stay at Lake.
Yeah.
let's make sure that this episode drops while he's there. So he's like listening to, like, you know, I don't really care about the hotels and stuff, like, while at the high-end Marriott on Lake Como. And it's like,
whereas he's trying to roll his rolling suitcase along the cobblestone streets in Milan and can't get anywhere. Meanwhile, the streets in Japan are perfect and you know, no restriction to rolling a suitcase.
We missed that for the in-country travel, like walking with suitcases. That's definitely a factor.
Yep, oh, yeah.
For sure.
I will never forget studying abroad in Italy and showing up with like two checked bags, rolling them down the cobblestones, and then carrying them up like a four-story walk-up apartment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wouldn't do that again.
That way, because it's another aspect. You forget about that until you do it every time.
Try it with all your dive gear. It's... Not exciting.
Mm.
All right, last section here. Round four is experience value. This is kind of when at the destination or country, if you will, what you do. And again, we have two heavyweight contenders here, Japan and Italy, just deep culture, incredible food, so much to see, lots of history, museums and all of that. Of course, you know, Italy, I think you're going to get a lot of like generally affordable, like high-end quality dining. It's almost like you can't eat anything that's not fantastic when you're in Italy. Although I might try that on my next trip with three young girls. The wine in Italy, just incredible. Wineries everywhere, wine tours to see it all. The history is probably second to none. A Rome alone would be second to none. But then when you broaden that to the rest of the country, so much to see and do. And you do have a kind of the luxury splurges as well. Like your, you know, Amalfi, you can do the private boat tours, the private Vatican tours to see the smallest country in Europe. You know, high-low options kind of in every city. Language barrier is not a big deal. You know, it feels pretty accessible for Western travelers. But then on the flip side, Japan, you know, the food is incredible, even though it might be a little bit less familiar to the average, you know, United States-based traveler. The cultural experiences, like the tea ceremonies. Have any of you done a tea ceremony before?
I've done high tea. Tons of fun. Not a Japanese tea ceremony.
Yeah, high tea is a form of tea ceremony, I would say. Yeah.
I just need to interject here. I'm really disappointed that you didn't do a like sake versus Chianti type
For this
section. You know what? Round five is which one has the best? All of them are good.
That's not even a debate.
I would agree, but Japan's food culture is just incredible, and you have like the Kobe beef, like the as well as like the seafood, the high end sushi, just so many different things to try there as well. Shopping is incredible in both. Language barrier is not too big of a deal anymore. You know, cultural differences. Definitely Japan is going to be a little bit less familiar, as I kind of mentioned, and really more like kind of immersive. It feels like when you go in Japan, especially if you show up one of the big cities first after your wonderful bullet train ride from the airport, it just like it's almost overwhelming in a great way. It's just like someone took the slider when you on life and like turned it all the way up to like 10 in terms of immersion. It's like, boom, this is Japan. So you have lots of options in both. I know some of us have been to both, but I'm curious, who wins the cultural, the immersive stuff when you're actually on the ground?
Mm. This is probably the closest category.
Yeah. This is the one I have to be on the fence. There's no way for me to pick on this one.
Mm.
Oh, no.
I was sitting here hoping that your answers would influence me to get off the fence, but I'm definitely on the fence now.
I don't think you can. I don't think either one wins on the food. Obviously very different, but each an exceptional cuisine in their own classification and category.
Yeah.
Yeah. Food is, for me, food is totally a toss up. These are two world-class dining destinations. And if you go hungry while you're at either one, but you're doing something wrong. Of course, I think Italian food will be less offensive to some people, like offensive in the sense of like, there are some people who just don't
like more familiar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like both have deep, deep culture and history.
Yeah.
Both like you could really easily break the local rules and like be the biggest generic American possible. I don't know. I'll let Emily talk while I think, but I think I have a decision.
We're all waiting for someone to put down a claim in the ground and, you know.
I mean, if you think about the food from like an affordability perspective, I think you can get much higher quality for less money in Japan if we really need to make a call there, but don't.
I mean, we haven't even mentioned the vending machine culture in Japan.
I was waiting for
now. They have just exceptional food just on every street corner and vending machines. Where here in the U.S., we look down more or less on what gets served there. And there, they serve some of the best on-the-go type stuff just straight up from a vending machine.
And same that convenience store. Yeah, but same idea, right?
Parmesan snack from McDonald's.
Or the pistachio McFlurry from McDonald's in Italy.
Oh, wow.
All right, I have my claim.
Okay, go ahead.
Too.
All right, I'm going to Japan. Obviously, like I've mentioned before, completely toss up for a number of different reasons. I think the reason I'm going to Japan is because of the note where we mentioned that is culturally, it is a more difficult and challenging experience because of some of the differences, especially for us Westerners. And I think that that presents a level of unfamiliarity and like, hey, I need to figure this out and sort of to be able to kind of conquer your experience there. I think it's tougher, and I think that helps to sort of enlighten you. That's kind of the experience we want from travel, is to be able to see how different parts of the world work, live, you know, eat, play, all the different things, truly experience a different culture. It's not a disparagement on Italian culture, but typically for us, that's a more familiarity. And so to go to Japan and really try and immerse yourself, you were truly getting that sort of type of experience that we want and kind of hope for in terms of world travel.
That's a way better tiebreaker than mine.
Yeah.
mine was going to be the wine. Like I was like, if there's some place I can differentiate Italian wine, don't get me wrong, Japan has a good and bustling wine and sake and whiskey culture, but you know, I'm a wine guy, and give me some Italian wine any day.
Good choice.
But Matt's is better for the human experience. Mine's maybe better for the soul.
There you go.
I guess I'm gonna go Japan, and now that Travis has just based it off of something that he likes, I will also base it off of something that I like, which is skiing. Not that you can't ski in Italy, but the skiing in Japan is world class.
Snowiest location in the world, isn't it? In like Niseko.
Here we are again. Matt's pulling up. Just open the last tab, Matt, for precipitation by city.
Yep. I mean, just the affordability of it there, the quality of it there is incredible, and it's definitely a bucket list trip for me. So I got to go Japan. And also, like, even the food that you can get while you're skiing is affordable and top tier. Just, it's not $20 chicken nuggets at Vail Resorts. It's, you know, delicious ramen that's probably like a third of the price.
And $20 chicken nuggets.
Yes, that area is in Hakoda. 58 feet is their average annual snowfall.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Have you seen the, maybe we can drop the pictures in here, editor, please. But the pictures where the roads, like the buses driving on the roads, or they've plowed the road, or they actually, I think they're heated. But there's literally like 40-foot snowbanks and walls where the buses that drive you like through town are. It's insane.
Yeah.
That seems a little scary. Anyone else a little scared by that? No? A little melt, a little fall? Like, you know.
I trust Japanese ingenuity and engineering.
That is also a good point. Yeah. That's why their trains went.
They probably have it. They probably have the heating. It's probably like geothermals from the hot springs. It just goes right through the streets and it melts the snow.
Oh man, I'm like, I've gone back and forth like three times and just listening to all your arguments, and I'm still unsure I'm gonna land, but I'm gonna go with my gut. I'm going Italy here, and I think that and this might be because I have more experience traveling to Italy than I do Japan, but I do love in Italy like the kind of subcultures that you get with like different types of like food. Like you'll get, you know, it's different styles of pasta. It's kind of more of a seafood focus as you head a little bit more south or toward the coast. And I do love that kind of little bit of granularity that you get there within that Italian culture.
Sounds like somebody's been watching Stanley Tucci's Searching for Italy series.
I haven't yet, but I'm going to have to add it to the list. Start filming Searching for Japan season 2 or whatever, so we can even things out there. But
Japan is just kind of building off that, Bryce. Like, Japan is one of those places where when I think about planning a trip to Japan, I feel as if I need to have a pretty strict day-to-day itinerary. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's when I'm going to do it. Here's where I'm going to go. Whereas Italy feels like one of those places where I can say, I'm just going to walk around and see what I can find. Just explore the local area that I'm in. Like, I don't think I'm going to get as much value from doing that in Japan, and I've not been, so I could be totally off base, but just like I really like that sense of exploration and self-discovery. Maybe this is a more compelling argument than the wine is better. But to, you know, as you kind of talked about it, Bryce, it made me think of this, that to me, that's, as a traveler, that's what I really enjoy, is just having unstructured time to go out and explore, see what I can find, whether it is a little wine shop, or finding a random small museum to go into and explore, or finding a great sandwich. And I don't feel that a trip to Japan is something that I would do the same.
Unless that sandwich vendor might be a vending machine.
Yeah, that's true. In
case, maybe you'd get some of that, but yeah. I mean, so hard to choose. So as we kind of start to wrap this episode, I'm going to ask each of you like to pick one of these overall, but to kind of quickly recap, flights sound like it was tied 2-2. You know, they're both fantastic, cut but split there. Intercountry transit, we went 3-1 for Japan. Travis is still on Team Italy here, and we'll let him have that. Hotels and stays was 4-0 Japan. Better experience, more options there. Experience value sounds like we're going 2-2 for Japan versus Italy. But of course, I think we have all switched positions at least once in our discussion here. So I want to, my last question, I guess, for all of you is, if you had to pick one, factoring in all of those things, and you know, if you have to try to answer it from like your perspective as well as that of the average kind of points and miles traveler, feel free. But if you have to pick just one at the end, which one are you going with?
Are you, clarifying question, one like for our personal experience or just in general?
Like in general, I guess if you have like the option to do either on like the most typical like award booking and train riding and dining and hotels, which one you think, I guess, or which one would you recommend for someone who came to you and asked like, hey, should I do Italy or Japan?
I'm probably going Italy. I'd caveat it with, yes, I know this makes me sound like I'm fence sitting, but I think for someone who is newer to travel, 100%. Newer to exploring, your experience in Italy is going to be much more valuable. And that's not to say anything against Japan. I think Japan is a great place to go once you're a more experienced traveler. I think those cultural challenges, the rigidity, if it's not something you're expecting, just because you're new to travel, might come across the wrong way. And I think Italy's going to be a little bit easier, feel a little bit more comfortable for someone who's newer to travel. You know, yes, Japan, the infrastructure, the hotels, all of that is great. But like people come back from Italy telling stories about the most life-changing bowl of pasta or having this random glass of wine with someone on a street corner, or, you know, just walking around and people watching or riding a bike through the Tuscan countryside. Like, and to me, that's a lot more valuable than a really cool bullet train. And I'm also not a skier. So, you know, both are fantastic destinations. Like you're not going wrong with either one. But if someone came to me, I didn't know anything about them as a traveler. I didn't know anything about their preferences. I'd point someone to Italy before I point them to Japan.
Yeah.
All right. 1-0 Italy. Emily, what do you think?
I think the way that I am approaching it is like, if I had to book another trip this year, I would book Italy, but that's only because like, I feel like it takes so much less planning. Like I could book the flights and the hotels and not think about it until it was like 2 weeks before the trip. Or 6 weeks before the trip. Whereas like, I really want to go to Japan and I want to go ski in Japan, but that to me is so much more of like a bucket list trip that I really need to like plan in advance, think about it, book all the different excursions and all the stuff. So from like an ease of booking perspective, I would probably pick Italy. But now I regret saying that out loud, but I'll just stop talking so that, you know, we can keep getting through this episode.
We'll call that Italy 2-0 sure. With the, yeah. I guess, two asterisks of, but they're both great. And there's going to be right. More of those, of course, as well. Matt, how about you?
For me personally, Japan, hands down. That's primarily focused on the fact that I still haven't been there and want to. I've been to Italy a few times. It's not a knock on Italy, but it's more so just knocking off a new place off the list. For the average traveler, presumably beginner, maybe even slightly intermediate, I'm still picking Italy. I think just echoing some parts of what Travis was saying, but more so just on the, it's a much easier destination, especially if you're early on as a traveler. Familiarity, culturally, you'll understand things. Heck, you can read the street signs if you get lost. Like, I think there's something to be said for that, for sure. Obviously, that's much easier in today's age than it was even 10 years ago, but just kind of, I think it sets the tone for much easier just to be able to get around, navigate both physically, but then also just the cultural part of it too. And Japan would be much tougher for a first time or very, very early traveler who may not be comfortable with getting lost or not having a set schedule or knowing exactly what's going on. And yeah, I think you can probably fly a little bit more by the seat of your pants in Italy and be fine. In Japan, you would probably just need a lot more prep and preparation for.
So we'll call that, that's a little bit of both. I know you mentioned Japan.
That's why I was asking the qualifying question at the start is, who are we answering this for?
Gotcha. Well, so we have Japan scores its first point here, but with the caveat of that's for Matt, not necessarily the average traveler.
Yep.
And I think for me, I have pretty much the same answer as Matt. If I'm choosing, I'm probably going Japan. But for recommendation for kind of your typical reader, definitely Italy, especially if you don't have a lot of experience with international travel. It's going to be a lot more kind of familiar, comfortable, laid back. You don't have to plan as much in advance as you'd have with Japan. Excellent wine. The food is fantastic in both. But I would say like a shout out for Japan for anyone who has that kind of desire to like for that next level of travel. Like maybe you've been to a couple spots in Europe or even other spots in Asia and you're kind of looking for something kind of new or like a different. Japan should be at the top of your list if you're in that bucket. It's just completely otherworldly in terms of just the depth of culture that they have, the history, the kind of the incredible focus on things that we might often overlook as Americans in kind of day-to-day culture and stuff. And I just remember kind of coming home from Japan and being like mind blown as to kind of the different way that they approach seemingly, you know, what were unexamined things for me as an American in day-to-day life. So it's a long way of saying both win, but I guess I'm going to cast my vote for Italy. So it's 3-1 there at the end, but man, having to choose in all these situations is so tough.
This is a tough one because it's two destinations that couldn't be any more different.
Yeah.
Italy, like they're both old, rooted in their history and culture, but Italy is a more rustic, historic type destination, more go with the flow, laid back. Whereas Japan is much more modernized technology, like, and it's crazy how two destinations with very little actual overlap can be so difficult to choose between. So the verdict is just go.
Yeah.
Ooh. Bingo. There you go. Problem solved. Yeah.
Earn enough points to do both. The end.
And before we wrap, before Bryce wraps, I have to throw something in here. I absolutely cursed us. I believe it was at the start of this episode. Yep. I just saw.
No.
It's currently like 2:33 p.m. where I am right now recording. Just saw a message from our award booking service team at 2:08 p.m. So literally 25 minutes ago, they shared that Iberia has published a devaluation. So,
Travis, why did you have to do that to us?
So every other airline is going to do a revaluation and make everything better. So we obviously don't have
for that 34K off peak.
God,
Europe.
Yes.
So I'm sincerely apologetic to everyone out there because I think it was this episode where I said, oh, and that's gonna get devalued, blah blah blah, and here we are in the middle of recording a devaluation comes across our desk. So
the key takeaway here is everyone remember this, it's Travis's fault.
Yep. Always.
That's it. In fact, the title of this episode is Travis's fault.
In fairness, and quickly skimming the changes, it looks like it only went from 34,000 to 40,500. So, okay. You know, what's that? A 15, 20% change? Not awful.
Yeah.
But it's still Travis's fault.
Just wild that happened live.
That's nuts. That's like, I normally don't laugh about devaluations, but I mean
today you gotta. But
there is the small chance that between now and publish time, you'll see a headline of like Italy to install bullet train network.
Oh yeah.
And like replace all of their old trains with like, you know, let's just bring the Japanese train builders over to Italy. Like, let's just solve this. And then the Italian winemakers can go
to trains that go about 250 miles an hour. I don't know what the bullet train speed goes. Looks like up to almost 300 miles an hour. So like, they're not that far off on some, it's probably a select route, but still.
I'd say it's probably one single route, right? Yeah. Can go up to 250 miles an hour, but correct, hasn't since 1984. Okay, well, we want to hear from you. Head on over to our Facebook group or here in the comments. Tell Travis why it's his fault, and then tell us, what would you choose, Italy or Japan? Be sure to tell us your stories, especially if you've been to both. Point out where in our arguments or things we might be overlooking. We almost missed the vending machine component. I feel like the word that didn't come up enough in this was weather. I mean, Italian weather in the summer. Oof. So can I go back and change my votes now? Too late?
Yeah.
And are there any other destinations you'd like to see in a future showdown? Hopefully ones that are not so symmetrically awesome in different ways. Let's make this a little bit easier for us. I feel like, you know, Dublin or Dubai. Let's do that one next.
Memphis or Nashville?
Is that Dublin, Ohio or Ireland?
Hey. Yeah, Dublin, Ohio, a little easier for me to get to.
Yeah.
No bullet trains, but yeah, that'll be fun. But no matter where you choose to go, we are here to help you make the most of your points and miles. Best way to do that, sign up for My10X, our free tool to help you track all of your cards, points, miles in one single place. It's linked in the show notes, or you can just go right to my.10xtravel.com. Be sure to check out our paid membership program, 10X Travel Plus. You get those two free one-on-one consults each year and a free award booking. If you don't want to go through all the hassles of devaluations that come up while you're on a podcast or anything like that, let our experts do it for you. And be sure to check out our Facebook group, where you have over 390,000 people coming together to tell Travis why it is all his fault, as well as to share their points and miles knowledge for any destination that you'd like to visit. I think if you hop in there and ask about either of these countries, you're going to have 100 comments from people within 5 minutes on either side. And I'm curious to see how they're going to vote on some of these as well. So from all of us here at 10X Travel, I'm Bryce. Thanks for listening to Take Off, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. We will see you next time.
And Travis is wrong.